RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So now to discuss the RMA Amendment Bill, the Fish and Game versus Environment Southland decision, more about that in a moment, and the suspension of SNAs, more about those in a moment. Joining us on RCR now, ACT MP and Minister for Biosecurity, Minister for Food Safety, Associate Minister of Agriculture and Associate Minister for the Environment, Andrew Hoggard is with us. Andrew, thanks for coming in.
No worries, thank you.
Okay, can we start with the RMA Amendment Bill passes third reading? We had Penny Simmons here last week to discuss the Amendment Bill. It appears to address many of the niggling regulatory issues making farmers' lives unnecessarily difficult that we've been hearing. So are you happy with all the regulatory fixes you wanted? Did they get into the bill? And can you take us through, talk us through them quickly, the important issues, if there are any that we haven't covered?
Yeah, look, well, certainly the bill was meant to deal with sort of time-critical fixes, things we needed to just tidy up quickly because otherwise that'd impose huge costs on farmers for very little gain, given that we're making a bunch of changes. I mean, the main stuff I want to see that's going to make life a lot better for not only farmers, but a whole range of small business people up and down the country will be changes to the Resource Management Act and MPS Freshwater and a number of these other national policy statements. So this bill was just intended to stop or to solve a few little issues that were getting in the way here and now, and give ourselves some time to get those bigger pieces of work done, which is where the big benefits will come from. Some of the changes we had, the trying to clarify for councils or remove the need for them to apply the hierarchy of obligations when they're granting consents to farmers. My understanding, and certainly when I was at Federated Farmers, we were having issues with Environment Canterbury basically not being able to grant consents to farmers or renew consents even because they felt like the Tamana Otawai rules meant that they couldn't renew those consents. So that was a critical thing we needed to get solved. The stock exclusion regs, they got bought in, but it was just a mess from day one with these things, trying to define come up with a one-size-fits-all for the entire country, and it was just never going to work. And you'd had a situation where it was going to apply huge costs to pretty extensive sheep and beef farmers, where the impact of their merino or Hereford cow occasionally wandering over to a creek to drink from it is minor. It's not like my dairy farm where you've got a concentrated number of animals who could make quite a mess in a waterway. Very different situation. And yet it was going to massive amount of costs for very little gain and possibly actually end up driving people off their farms, possibly end up with the farms just being planted in pine trees as the only option. The winter grazing rules is changes there. You know, removing the national rules because, quite frankly, the regional councils already had where it was an issue. They had rules in place, but you also had industry programs in place and a lot of farmer buy-in to improving the practice, getting things right. So it was just unnecessary additional government regulation that, would have added costs, complexity, making people get consents when they didn't need to. Again, let's get rid of that one. The SNAs, which you're going to want to talk about as well, it was a pause on the identification of new ones to stop councils running around identifying more land whilst we're busy re-looking at the whole MPS freshwater. Same thing with the pause on farm plans. We're reviewing how we do those, making sure they're fit for purpose, making sure that farmers aren't having to double up with two plans when, a government plan and then the industry plans they've already got in place. So just, it was about pausing that work while we get the wider work done in government to make sure these things are fit for purpose.
That's a whole lot of stuff. It sounds like the rulemakers at the time, anyway, before, are on another planet, Andrew. There doesn't seem to be, and I'm no farmer, but I understand what reality is. Of course, the odd stock is going to go over the road and have a drink. You know, it doesn't mean the whole world's going to collapse. This sort of over-the-top approach and lack of real-world view, unless I'm missing something, seems to be quite stunning.
Well, I likened it to the fact that I always, because, you know, when this all sort of came in, when I was in the vice president and president role for Federated Farmers, and it was almost like the previous government, when they'd come back to power, they hadn't actually paid attention to what had been happening on farm in the preceding 9 years. So, you know, and in that 9 years, there'd been a lot of change within the farming sector around, okay, we need to up the game on what we're doing for the environment. We need to bring in stuff. So a lot of the stuff had already been, you know, it was being addressed, and yet they'd been sitting there in the opposition benches for 9 years thinking about the last thing they wanted to do in 2008. So when they got the opportunity, boom, they just went at it again rather than realise, hey, the environment's changed. Farmers are on board with a lot of this stuff now and working towards it. Instead of regulating the hell out of them with often impractical one-size-fits-all stuff, or one-size-fits-none, as it turned out to be, let's just work with them. And so that's sort of how I saw it. You know, they just waiting for 9 years to be able to regulate, and they got their opportunity, so that's what they did.
Yeah, but it's not in the real world, is it? That's just that little thing.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't recognise the fact that things had changed and they weren't keeping up with that.
All right, to Fish and Game versus Environment Southland, the decision requires Southland farmers to apply for resource consent for diffuse charges, which basically means getting a resource consent to farm. You can maybe inform us more on that. It also appears to have implications for farmers across all of the country, not just Southland. The government is going to have to address this legislatively, isn't it, Andrew? And what do you plan to do about it? And what's the time frame?
So this was called, I know the official wording was Freshwater Amendment Bill with other matters, something like that. We just called it RMA 1. We've got an RMA 2 coming up, which will address it in there. So within RMA 1, we did address an issue with a similar court case. When you take it together with the Southland ruling, it was going to mean that every farmer had to get or earn a catchment that was supposedly above or below or above national bottom lines for any attribute. Every farmer was going to have to get a consent for diffuse discharges, which effectively is a cow or sheep standing in a paddock, lifting its tail and doing its business.
Which is a normal business for the animal, right?
Yeah. And but then the other ruling goes and says a council can't grant a consent if the water is above national bottom lines. So you ended up in the circle where it was going to say you have to get a consent and the council's not allowed to grant a consent. So we've addressed one of those, and now in RM2 we'll be addressing the other one. And, I mean, it's basically the courts have sort of viewed it that everything has to be done tomorrow, whereas the talk from even the opposition, though, when they were in government, they were talking about over a generation. The view was this wasn't, you know, it's taken us 160-odd years nearly 200 years since we got our first cow in New Zealand.
Wow. That's an anniversary we should be celebrating.
Yes, definitely.
Cow Day.
And so, you know, to get to the point where we're at with waterways, and I quite frankly, you know, yep, there's some challenges out there, but I don't think the world's ending on that. And it's a case of, okay, it's going to take us a generation or two to improve things perhaps to where we'd like, and there's some technology that's going to need to come about. But, you know, as long as we get on the journey and start making some changes, that's the key thing. And this court ruling was all about effectively, I mean, the two court rulings taken together would have just basically meant that if your consent was due to be renewed, you would have been the sacrificial lamb and effectively not allowed to farm. And so it would have been people dropping off until there wasn't enough, or they got to a point where you didn't have that much farming happening anymore in the catchment, and they viewed that it was all right. Well, it's not all right, because we need farming to pay the bills in this country. So we've got to take a longer-term view of it, not just the, quite frankly, the very short-term view that the court took.
I wonder if you have an opinion on this. Federated Farmers is calling for Fish and Game to be stripped of its advocacy function.
Well, it does do a lot of stuff over a wide amount of area. And personally, when I was at Feds at a national level, we were starting to get along quite well with Fish and Game at a national level. I don't think that memo's perhaps gotten down to all of the various provinces. And quite frankly, you know, I understand some of the issues down there around a bit of an attitude around allowing people to extract gravel from riverways to stop for erosion, but also to use for, you know, metal races or for metalling on the farm. It just seems, yeah, they're taking a very adversarial approach, and quite frankly, I would encourage them to be a bit more cooperative with the local farmers in terms of, you know, because otherwise this will be the outcome that they get with people banning fishing or fishermen from coming across their land. They do need to try and understand these issues and try and work out compromises, not be so dogmatic, quite frankly.
Maybe they should add gravel to their name, Fish and Game and Gravel.
Yeah.
All right, a couple more to ask you about. Has the government done any more thinking about the issue in Gore? And this is where the whole district has been identified as an area of interest to Māori, which makes it difficult, I guess, for farmers to develop their land. Will the government be pursuing any legislative or policy fixes on this issue? And if so, timeframes. You got any? Yeah.
So what you've got here is this is all under Part 6 of the RMA, and certainly people have been saying you need to scrap or change Part 6. Well, the good news is, yeah, Part 6 is going along with all the other parts of the RMA and will be replaced with a new RMA. So, as I said, this, you know, it's one of the things we're going to change. We didn't, in the overall legislation, it wasn't one of the things we thought would be appropriate to do in these quick fixes, because it was going to be a more fundamental, you know, we could spend a whole bunch of time trying to come up with, because Part 6 is quite messy, we could waste a whole bunch of time and effort trying to make amendments to Part 6, or we could just get on with doing the whole replacement. And so that's the decision we've made, to make the whole replacement. I don't understand why some councils feel like they've got to rush all this stuff through. I mean, the RMA has been around since 1991, so Part 6 has been around for, what was that, 33 years. And why the sudden need, when they know everything's about to change, to rush through and do all this stuff is absolutely beyond me.
Why do you think? Okay, you just answer that.
Market, you know, it just makes no sense why they're pushing ahead with this stuff.
Is it ideological, Andrew?
Yeah, look, it's, and I think some of these councils, they're quite possibly being told by officials, and I've heard from some councillors, oh, but our council officials are telling us that the government wants us to do X, Y, and Z. And I'm going, no, I bloody don't.
Yeah, I'm the man. Talk to me, right?
Yeah. Just change things and then you can do stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right, Andrew, one last issue. New Zealand and China recently updates mutual recognition arrangement for organic products. Can you talk us through a bit, because we have a high level of interest in this area with our audience, what this means and how big of a boost to our organic exports can we expect from this? Because it's a huge market, right?
Yeah. So this is something we signed. When was I down south? not last Friday, the Friday before. So I signed that with my Chinese counterpart. Basically, it's just about, as the name says, mutual recognition of the standards. So often globally, we have a standard in one country that is kind of different to another country, and then you can get all sorts of paper shuffling getting in the way of just saying, okay, that's we're happy, that's the equivalent of our standard, same outcomes, good to go. You don't have to prove that you're meeting our standard. So in a nutshell, it's basically if an organic producer meets New Zealand standards, boom, the Chinese recognize it. Right. And they put organic on the product to sell in China. What it's worth, obviously it's a high-end market. It'll undoubtedly be worth some, it'll increase things a little bit. I wasn't given an actual dollar amount. I'm sure there'll be a couple of million there in extra sales, but it's like we're just going to basically pick up all these little wins, as many of these little wins as we possibly can. I know there's, focus on getting some big wins like an India free trade deal, but a lot of these little ones as well can all add up to giving our farmers and growers more opportunities, more chances to go into various markets, reduce a bit of the paperwork burden on them, and get some benefits like that. So in the big scheme of things, it's not like I've just done a deal with a free trade deal with India or something like that.
Yeah.
But just, I view it in my rugby days. I've picked the ball up and taken it forward a few metres and reset them all just a few metres up the field.
Thank you for putting it like that. Even I can understand that.
Yeah.
Think of the market size, right?
Yeah.
It's the biggest single market in the world, and it's a directional sort of pointer to where we should be, the products that we should be concentrating on, and the way that the reputation that they have. It sounds like a great opportunity, actually.
Yeah, so I'm hopeful.
I'm not peeing in your pocket, by the way.
I'm hopeful the sector can take opportunities here, and organic produce does get a premium. So the more we can open up those markets for our producers, the better.
Right. How's the job been, Andrew? Been over a year now, well over.
Yep. I've gone in at the deep end and getting my head around it and getting into it. So a few things I'd do differently now than on day one, but we're cracking on, and I'm certainly hopeful we can, more changes to just make farmers' lives easier, business people's lives easier, restore confidence. That's the key thing for me. So I was really happy to see that RM1 bill pass, because for me, there was a few things in there that just eroded farmer confidence. And when you don't have confidence, you don't make investments, you're not making investments, the economy's stagnant, and we need to turn that around for everyone's benefit. So the more confidence we can give to, producers, small business people, that, hey, you can make investments, you will see a return, you will be able to enjoy the benefits of it, the more likely they're going to do that, and it's going to lift the game for everyone.
Andrew Hoggard, Minister for Biosecurity, for Food Safety, Associate Minister of Agriculture and Associate Minister for the Environment. Thanks for coming on and updating us on those issues. We appreciate it.
No worries. Thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.